Welcome to Booked, where the brightly coloured fish of literature swim round their bowl going, oh, oh, oh. So let's chug them some food, shall we? Here's a small poem from my sequence, well-known writers as sea creatures. Wordsworth was a limpet. Wordsworth was a limpet, stuck all day on a rock. So when he produced a considerable body of poetic work, it came as quite a shock. So, who's thrashing about in my keepnet today? Mark Thomas and Roger McGough? And who are my pretty mermaids with seaweed in their hair? Oh, it's Dilly Keen and Miles Kington. So, now we've cleaned the water and changed the gravel, let's hold our noses and jump in and have a game of cards. Each team has a pack of cards in front of them, and each card has on it the name of a book with a colour in the title. All the panel has to do is guess the title, and you're not allowed to mention any of the names on the card. I'm going to give regular time checks, and it's Roger and Mark first.
Set in Africa, about a hunter and a lot of in the valley, valleys of Kenya. Naughtiness. You got the colour right. Naughtiness.
White mischief.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is Poland. It happened in Poland. It's a kid's book. It's about a letter opener is the name of it. It's a kid's book. It's during World War II.
James Bond.
Goldfinger.
Exactly.
This is a really annoying woman with
30 seconds.
The name of a princess, the horse riding one.
Anne of Green Gables. This is, Whoopi Goldberg's first film, I think.
It's Colour Purple.
Exactly.
This is, it sounds like a Tom Jones song. Happens in Wales. It's full of it in
Green
Wales.
Green Valley.
Yeah, lovely.
Hang up my Green Valleys. This one's the
5 seconds.
Outside the sea. Everton colour. Everton.
Blue.
Blue, the blue.
Lagoon.
Lagoon.
Well done. Right,
before we move on, can I just tell Roger the one that he missed, which was The Silver Sword? Which is a really nice book. It's a great kids' book.
Yeah. And some members of the audience knew that. Dilly and Miles, it's your go, and I'm going to be really strict, starting now.
This is a bird with a big tail, and it's an unusual colour for it. No, lovely big tail.
Oh, the Tommy Peacock, is it?
Yes.
D.H. Lawrence.
And it's a particular colour.
I can't remember.
It's not a colour.
Blank peacock. White peacock.
Yeah.
This is the opposite. It's a woman, and she's wearing this colour.
The woman in white.
No, the opposite, Dilly.
Black.
Oh, yeah. Woman in black.
All right.
30 seconds.
This is about a bloke who had one big eye and wreaked havoc in the tunnels. And the man who wrote it had it sort of disowned it. And it's a round fruit of a particular colour that you would...
I can't play.
15 seconds.
Citrus fruit.
Wolf ate her grandmother, and she's going to the forest, and...
Little Red Riding Hood. This is one of Arthur and his knights.
5 seconds.
And
Gawain the Green Knight.
Yes.
Yes.
Right, a horse.
Time's up. But what was the one you got wrong, the citrus fruit?
Clockwork Orange.
And now... Diary entry. Sneak previews into private worlds. Inner workings, secret meetings and books with pencils down the side. Yes. Diary entry. In this game, we open the diaries of famous literary characters to reveal the secret lives within. Dilly, who have you chosen?
I've got some extracts from the diary of Cruella de Vil. From 101 Dalmatians. December the 1st, 1963. Brr. December the 2nd. Brr. December the 3rd, brisk outside. Frightfully depressed. Simply nothing to wear. December the 4th. December the 5th. Weather very nippy indeed. Must get some warm clothes, but darling simply cannot face wearing a car coat. December the 6th. Weather is real brass monkeys. Some ghastly people have moved in next door. December the 7th. New neighbours, frightful nuisance. They have three stupid red setters who bark continuously. December the 8th. Thick snow has fallen overnight. Streets are impassable. Cannot possibly go into town to buy a new coat. December the 14th. Warm at last. Went to a frightfully glamorous showbiz party. Everyone simply adored my new fur stole. Verdict, russet really suits me. 1st of December 1964, a year later. Brr. December the 2nd. Brr. Icy out. Fur stole looking too sad now. Managed to catch this new movie everyone's talking about, My Fair Lady. Tune's good. Audrey Hepburn, simply lovely. Rex Harrison, his usual debonair self. But the costumes, my dear. Ascot scene, too divine. Cecil Beaton is a genius. Actually, I rather fancy myself in monochrome.
And Roger, who have you got?
Yes, I've chosen Edward Lear's poem, The Pobble Without Any Toes. So these are the Pobble Diaries. Woke up this morning, counted toes, then played my favourite game. This little piggy went to market. Aunt Jobiska brought in breakfast. Scrambled eggs and buttercups, fried with fish, washed down with lavender water. Yuck. That night, had strange dream of mermaids with sharp pearly teeth sucking my toes. Could this be an omen, I wonder? Friday. Aunt Jobiska, flushed with excitement at news of visitor arriving for the weekend. Apparently it is a man with a luminous dong. Saturday.
Popular fantasy even now, Roger.
Saturday. Turns out that Aunt Jobiska, I got it all wrong about the dong. The luminous nose was the giveaway, and the fact that he was a dong, a right dong, if you ask me. He could bore for England, that man. On and on about the jumbly girl who took one look at him and then sailed away in a sieve. With a hooter like that, who could blame her? What a snozzle. You could hang your overcoat on it. Certainly not a nose I would have picked. Sunday. Luckily, the illuminated proboscis left first thing this morning, taking its owner with it. In the afternoon, when Aunt Jobiska was tickling my toes with a runcible spoon, we received a visit unannounced from Mr. Edward Lear, who brought a plate of chocolate shrimps and a crate of masala. When totally tiddly, he came up with a crazed idea for a poem which involved my swimming the Bristol Channel and having my toes bitten off by mermaids. I was horrified. Aunt Jobiska didn't help either. Before passing out, she kept reciting, "It's a fact the whole world knows that pobbles are happier without their toes." Later that night, I crawled into bed and dreamed of mermaids with alligator mouths. Monday. My worst nightmares are to be realised. Mr. Lear called again, bringing with him the dreaded poem. Tuesday. Heard the news that the poem is to be published tomorrow. Stayed in bed all day. Wednesday. Got up. Fell over.
And now, vox pops, voices on the air, storylines compressed into pithy sentences by people on the street. And our panel have to guess which work of literature is being described by the people on the street. Roger and Mark, see if you can get this one.
A black comedy.
Young, handsome Malcolm McDowell.
Very 60s.
Leather-clad, amoral man enters the
kitchen sink,
where there's obviously the life of a middle-aged brother.
Psychological drama.
The bisexual nature of the lodger.
Actually, Troilism.
A lot about sexuality.
The writer met a very sticky end.
It mirrors his life in some ways.
Yeah. Well, the writer getting a sticky end is a bit of a giveaway there, because that'll be
Joe
the Hammer Orton,
mm-hmm.
who was beaten to death by his lover. Mm-hmm. And it's kitchen sink, so it's not his later comedies. It's his more funny ones. And the lodger has got to be Mr. Sloane, entertaining Mr. Sloane.
Certainly is, well done. And Dillian Miles, try this one.
The author was a foreign correspondent in Russia.
It was the first book that he wrote.
It was the covers of those books that really drew me to them.
I know that they had to change one of the names to make it suitable for the TV programme.
My sister loved it, and as a consequence, we always had to buy her boats for her birthdays and Christmas, because she never wanted dolls.
It is quite anarchic.
Stories about a childhood that could never actually exist.
There are no adults, figures of authority in it.
Better Drowned Than Duffers.
Dillian Miles.
I do remember that Arthur Ransome was a foreign correspondent in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And they had... I remember there's a character in the book called Titty.
Yes, there is.
Isn't there?
Yeah. Was it Swallows and Amazons? Was that his first one? Or was it We Didn't Mean to Go to Sea? Or?
It was Swallows and Amazons. Oh, very good. Roger Mark, listen to this one.
The author revisited the idea 26 years after the original publication.
It's a book lots of people read in their teens.
Predicted virtual reality.
A utopia.
It's all that's worst about the class system.
Feelies. Freedom of speech is just not there, even freedom of thought.
They don't know how to feel, they become numb.
Drug-induced literature.
So, there you go.
So it's a teen book. Have you got any idea about where we're going on this one, Roger?
Drug-induced...
The writer went back to 26 years later.
Yeah. And it is a book that a lot of people read in the teens, but it's not specifically a teenage book.
I know. Like Zen and the Art of...
So it'll be like times. Drug-induced things. Brave New World.
Brave New World.
Brave New World. Yeah.
Brave New World.
Yeah, Brave New World, that'll do me.
Do you know, it's Brave New World. The audience got that just before you.
Mm.
All right, then, Dillian Miles, try this one.
The opening scene is a street full of mud.
I think the title puts you off, actually.
The Road Sweeper and the Children.
This book contains the most wonderful scene of rain in Lincolnshire.
Extremely complicated plot.
The most wonderful example of spontaneous combustion.
Brought about by too much gin.
And it's got one very melancholic and rather sinister character whose surname is something to do with getting buried.
I like the imagery of the fog representing the confusion and the fog of the legal system at the time.
Better suited to a women's magazine serial.
Better suited to what?
A women's magazine serial.
I think it was a serial, wasn't it?
It was a serial.
And I think it's the legal system. Well, the spontaneous combustion actually gave it away. I think it's Bleak House.
It's Bleak House.
Yeah.
And now, don't give up the day job. In this round, famous authors try their hands at a different style of writing. It doesn't sound hilarious, but it frequently is, believe me. So, Mark, what's yours?
This is the unhilarious one. this is Franz Kafka, the author given to a lot of comedy. Franz. And Franz is trying his hand at reading the weather on the telly. Good evening. Michael Fish, who was due to do the weather tonight, has been suddenly and unexpectedly imprisoned. And as yet, we don't know what crime he has committed other than his incompatible efforts to be a celebrity personality and a weatherman at the same time. So I, Franz Kafka, will read the weather in his place. As you can see from our charts here, the outlook for tomorrow looks fine, fairly normal for this time of year, but obviously nothing is certain, anything can happen, and do expect the worst. The bright sunny patches in the northeast could well turn into earthquakes, floods, and in the lower regions maybe the odd plague of frogs, so mid-afternoon, do take a brolly with you. Let's look at the satellite pictures from which we gain no absolute knowledge, except the knowledge that the repetition of this inane social ritual is a search for meaning in a cruel and pointless world. Let's move on to the regions here. Wales trapped in a constant drizzle, but then you know that. Tomorrow, much the same as today. In fact, exactly the same as today, except possibly worse. Possibly worse because it is exactly the same. Over East Anglia, we see mist and fog, followed by inbreeding throughout the night. In the north, more rain, which is just as well as sunshine frightens them. And Croydon, near London, is actually going to have the best weather of the whole country. Sunny, bright morning, soaring temperatures by midday, and nearly tropical heat in the afternoon. All this beautiful weather in Croydon, obviously pointing and proving the fact that there is no justice in the world. The Isle of Wight does have rain today, but tomorrow the Isle of Wight will wake up to find itself transformed into a giant beetle. Midweek, an apple will lodge itself into the back of the Isle of Wight, causing infection, gradual decay and death. So the overall picture, bleak, confused, expect the worst, and do remember, even one tiny drop of rain can still take your eye out.
And Miles, what have you got for us?
Well, I was asked to have a bash at getting Dylan Thomas to write an entry for the Good Pub Guide. So I thought, why not? In this, actually, I'm aided and abetted by various voices of Mark and Roger and Dilly. I'm not saying this just to tell the audience. I'm just saying that to remind them that they're in this. Listen. It is nearly opening time in the morning in the Seven Stars, a small thatched pub near silly, suburban, semi-industrial, sweaty Swansea. The saloon bar is empty. The hands of the cracked clock show 10 to 11. The ashtrays on the table overflow with a rich harvest of last night's cigarette stubs. And underneath one of the tables is a pool of bitter beer left there last night by young Stan Smith when he staggered and spilt his pint without noticing just after he bought it. He looked at his empty glass in some surprise.
By golly, I drank that quick.
And he went back to the bar for a refill. But that was last night, and now at 10 to 11 on a grey, head-scratching, slow-dawning, yawning Friday morning, the bar is empty. Listen, there is a noise on the stairs. It is Trevor Jones, the landlord, who has come down to survey the wreckage. He looks round as he comes in.
Oh, bugger.
Says Trevor Jones, who had dreamt in the night that he'd actually for once got the whole place clean before he went to bed. But now in the saloon bar sees the ashtrays like armpits, the dirty glasses with fossilized foam, the crisp packets lying like drowned holidaymakers in Stan Smith's pool of unsuccessful beer. He slides in his slippers towards the blousy bar, ducking under the old timber beams, which were placed there temporarily in 1953 to mark the coronation and never got removed, knocking against the horse brasses, which are not made of brass and were never on a horse, and staring at the Scotch egg under the glass case as if it were an old friend, which it is.
We were in the Good Pub Guide in 1981, you and I, if only for 1 year,
says Trevor Jones to the Scotch egg.
And you were with me in 1982, when we were chucked out of the Good Pub Guide for installing piped music and putting up a sign welcoming coaches. If nobody buys you before the millennium, we could be in the Guinness Book of Records. The world's oldest Scotch egg has been lying in a glass case in the Seven Stars since before Margaret Thatcher became Prime Minister.
And Trevor Jones shuffles behind the old bar, so constructed that it's impossible to sit on a bar stool at it without giving your kneecaps concussion, and clears away the dismal damp beer mats, the ice bucket full of dirty water, and the beer glass broken in fury last night by Walter Samuel, 54, bank manager, when he saw Ezra Ransom come on the television over the bar. Listen. It's 2 minutes past 11 in the dusty, drained, derelict saloon bar, the Seven Stars, and the door opens from the street. Trevor Jones cannot believe his eyes. No one has ever come this early to the Seven Stars except by mistake. But a customer approaches.
What do you want?
Says Trevor Jones, suddenly conscious of the fact that he's wearing an open-necked dressing gown and an open-crotched pair of pyjama trousers. He wraps himself tight like a badly packed parcel.
A pint of beer, please,
says the customer, peering through the dark dust storm that he created when he opened the door. It whirls through the sunlight and vanishes in the corner where long years ago Mr. Whittaker threw a dart way off target and got Mrs. Whittaker through the windpipe. After which she lisped for the rest of her life and never went near the dartboard again.
Aren't you open yet?
We're nearly open,
says Trevor Jones, who goes through several different stages of openness when preparing to face the public. That is nearly open, virtually open, more or less open, and as open as I ever will be.
Trevor, where's my cup of tea?
The unlovely voice that comes from upstairs belongs to unlovely Mrs. Trevor Jones, who was a bright, breezy, buxom barmaid when he married her, and after 20 years of late nights is as prickly as barbed wire, and her voice as cracked as the perished pint glass her husband now polishes nervously.
Come in, my lovely.
I don't know who that was just came in, but tell him to piss off.
And the bathroom door slams shut upstairs as Mr. Jones smiles sadly at the newcomer.
That was my wife. She's a lovely person during opening hours.
The early customer looks round at the blotchy beer mats, the bar stools oozing unhappy horsehair, the plastic pineapple pot, the calendar showing the last month but one, the 1,000 lira note pinned behind the bar, which was going to be the start of a fantastic array of foreign currency, but never attracted any more, and the slightly split casing of the Scotch egg, sexily showing a glimpse of white within, like a flash of thigh.
I'll come back later then.
You'll do that,
says the landlord, sounding and feeling relieved.
You see, we don't get many people here this early in the day.
We like to start the day early, we good pub guide inspectors,
says the man, walking cheerfully out into the gently carbonated sunshine. Trevor Jones swears softly, looks the Scotch egg full in the face and says,
I don't think you and I are going to be in the Good Pub Guide again this year, boyo.
And now sound effects, in which our panel listen to sounds mixed together to give the plot of a book or something quite close to it, and try and guess which book it is. Dillian Miles, try this really difficult one to start with.
Halfway through, I thought it was Animal Farm, but it moved
on.
So
did I, and then I ran out again.
Here he comes. Beat this. Crowd scenes, fanfare, wedding.
Started with a funeral march.
Starts with death and goes on to wedding.
And then there was some windmill sails. Don't know if you got them.
Windmill sails. You don't know what windmill sails sound like.
We speak of little else in Barnsley.
There's only one book that windmills come in, that's Don Quixote.
But it's not that one, though.
There's another book that windmill sails come into, and it's Mill on the Flo...
Flying Dutchman.
There's actually one in the audience. Don't know if that helps you.
A windmill?
No.
A bear?
Right. There's a gent in the audience with face paint on, and his face is painted like a cat.
Right. Yes. Well,
I thought that'd help you.
There's a lot of meowing
in
there.
There's some meowing, yeah. I bet the audience know.
And somebody fell over and was cold.
The windmill? Puss in Boots! Who said that? It's obvious, isn't it?
When do they try and drown a cat in Puss in Boots?
At the start.
Do they?
Yeah. Don't drown a cat, no.
Which version?
The fella falls in the river.
Yeah.
Cat's saving.
The cat's got a life-saving certificate.
Yeah. And then the cat becomes the mayor of London and it's all happy ever after.
Is it fiction?
No, it's not fiction, it's documentary, no. Let's move on then.
My patch.
Now, Roger and Mark, yours is much easier than that.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Og navigere har været af meget stor betydning for vores land, hvad end det er drejet.
What was the language we heard there?
Danish.
Danish,
yeah.
Thank you.
Well,
some
the bit
Danish.
That confuses me is we
Hamlet.
Heard a very bit of a sexy bit.
Yes.
And a kettle.
That's
and then
right.
The sound of a ping-pong ball being dropped.
It wasn't a ping-pong
siren.
Ball. Not a ping-pong ball.
Roulette.
Yeah.
So Denmark?
Roulette. Ping-pong.
Roulette.
Footsteps running.
It's Dick Whittington.
So footsteps march. Running. There's a funeral march.
Stick
there?
With the Danish. The Danish should be helping
pastries.
Is
it Hans Christian?
No. Footsteps in the snow.
Footsteps in the snow.
Oh right, Miss.
Oh, the snow
Smiller's
princess.
Feeling for
Miss,
snow.
Really? Miss Smiller's feeling for snow. Very good. I enjoyed that book. Yeah. Very good.
That was very good. I think we'll give that a round of applause. So just go through the plot of Mrs. Miller's Feeling for Snow, Roger, if you can press it.
Well, it was, yes, the girl who was brought up in Denmark, wasn't she? And then she learnt all about the Danes having taken over Greenland. And she knew all about snow, and she could tell the different kinds of snow. She could eat, you know, she was familiar with snow. It's a very adventure story.
She was a snowologist.
So, yeah. She was seismic.
It's a good book if you've not read it.
It's hard to tell if Roger's actually read it, but...
It is actually. Oh,
yeah. I've read the first three pages about 20 times now. I've never got any further.
Oh, could you just give me your copy with the dog-eared bit with the kettle?
And now the fish are swimming around the bowl with that hungry look of love in their fish-like eyes, so it's time for the last round, Lonely Hearts. Mark, got any Lonely Hearts?
I have. This is an ad that Frankenstein put in the personal columns. Wanted. Woman to explore walks, talks and love of lightning storms. Must have sense of humour and fear of enraged gatherings with flaming torches. Looks not important. I want a woman who can use her own brain, even though it belongs to somebody else.
Uh-huh. Miles got any?
Billy Bunter I've got one for. Growing boy wishes to meet member of opposite sex, or any sex, with interest in food. Please send photo of contents of fridge.
Rogers, you got one?
Yeah, I've got the Gollum. Remember the Gollum in Lord of the Rings? Mm. And this creature used to hang about in the lake. It was very dark, had big pale eyes, and used to eat people. He was also the Tolkien equivalent of the Riddler. He also spoke in riddles. So I'm going to give you a riddle. A riddle, my precious. If you don't get it right, I comes and eat you. My first is in slime, but not in mud. My second is in forest, but also in wood. My third is in virgin, but not in whore. My fourth is in sperm, but not in spore. My fifth is in truth, and not in lies. This brings sparkle to Gollum eyes.
Ah, very clever. So perhaps the audience at home can work it out.
Five-letter word.
Light.
No, lover. Lover.
I've got one.
Do we? Have you got one? Please tell us yours.
It's Minnie Haha. Woman who repeats herself. Woman who repeats herself. Seeks a man who doesn't mind. Seeks a man who doesn't mind.
Any more?
Yeah, I've got one more. This is Don Juan. Wanted. Entire female population. Form an orderly queue. Your turn will come.
How about come back, Roger McGough. All is forgiven. Monica.
Oh.
Any more?
Robinson Crusoe. Outdoor type on Club Med type island. Wishes meet young lady for hideaway holiday of up to 10 years. Please bring girlfriend. View double dating with man Friday. If no interest, please pass this bottle on.
Right then, it's time to finish now with my poem from my sequence of famous writers as fishy creatures. This is called Shakespeare Was an Anglerfish. Shakespeare was an anglerfish with a light on top of his head, swam round a bowl in the Midlands, Anne Hathaway chucked him bread. He could have made a living in a freak show every night, but he chose to be a writer with his very own bedside light. So it just remains for me to thank Mark Thomas, Roger McGough, Tilly Keane and Miles Kington. Is researched by Felicity Goodall, devised and produced in Bristol by Mark Yobst, and presented by me, Ian McMillan. Goodbye.